We've had many conversations about the needs of people who seek out mental health care. Those needs often go unmet for a variety of reasons. Now, people involved in substance abuse therapies and other forms of behavioral health care say it's time to call a crisis in staffing. And they've asked the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, to do just that. A letter to Brown from 20 mental health and addiction recovery providers earlier this month makes the request. We have two of the signers here to explain the crisis and its extent. Mike Marshall is the executive director of Oregon Recovers. Mike, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning, Jeff.
Heather Jeffries is with us as well, the executive director of the Oregon Council for Behavioral Health. Welcome, Heather.
Good morning, Jeff.
So, Heather, start us off. Talk about the letter to the governor where it originated.
Well, there was a coalition of partners, and we've worked together for a long time on a variety of subjects related to access to care for Oregonians who have concerns with mental health and substance use disorders. And what we have found across the pandemic is our sector and the wonderful caring people that work in our sector have just been working so hard with COVID, changing how they deliver care to telehealth, implementing COVID safety protocols, working so hard taking care of Oregonians in need. And what we find is folks are exhausted and we are losing workforce. We entered the pandemic with not enough workers to begin with. And then with these extra stresses of the crisis, and also just like in physical health, our consumers who need that care are deferring care. They're waiting longer, which means they're coming with more severe and more barriers and a harder time to get healthy. And so this, again, also puts another burden on the workforce. For folks, it's hard for them to really have the reserves to keep going. You know, we're all have our stressors right now. So due to that and the amount of loss of workforce, anywhere from 10 to 30% underfilled, it's the number one reason for lack of access and even program closures across the state. All of us got together and said, oh, my gosh, we can't wait any longer. There really needs to be something done. This is a crisis, and Oregonians' access to care is shrinking rapidly week by week.
Mike Marshall, it sounds like this has certainly been happening by degrees for quite some time, but was there some precipitating event or series of them that really lit the fuse on the request?
Well, Jeff, it's really important for your listeners to understand that this was a crisis before the COVID pandemic hit. We have the fourth highest addiction rate in the country, ranked 47th in access to treatment. Hence, the governor declared an addiction crisis, that addiction was a public health crisis in 2018, and the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission, at her request and the legislature's request, delivered a strategic plan for ending the crisis in February of 2020, right when COVID hit. So we were already in crisis mode. And then on top of it, Heather just gave a very good narrative of exactly the challenge. But what I would add to that is that many of the workforce folks are in recovery from addiction and mental health issues themselves. Their strength of their engagement in the system is their lived experience. And so it's important to understand under COVID that if you're in recovery, particularly from addiction, I'm 13 years in recovery, and my AA meeting disappeared overnight, right? When we all got shut down, the support system for people in recovery disappeared. And while many things moved onto Zoom and telehealth, it was not the same. And so you have a workforce that was many of the workforce were more impacted by COVID than others. And I think as it has gone on, we know that drug fatality rates are soaring in Marion County. In 2000, so the first year of COVID, it went up about 70%. I think there were 37 fatalities there. So far this year, as of 3 weeks ago, there were 90 fatalities. And then alcohol-related visits to emergency rooms are way up. And so when this crisis hit, we already had an access to care problem. Social distancing required some of the treatment providers temporarily reduce the access. And now with the higher demand and the loss of the workforce, what we're going to see is an addiction crisis compounded from what it already was.
So, Mike, are we talking specifically substance use disorders, or is it a broader issue across all kinds of mental health, behavioral health?
Oh, I think it's definitely a broader issue across all kinds of mental health because, well, the infrastructure, unfortunately, is too bifurcated. It It is getting increasingly integrated. And so you have staff that are both certified to do mental health work as well as addictions work, and they are just overwhelmed. And, you know, the grocers at the grocery stores are overwhelmed, and our nurses in the emergency room are extremely overwhelmed. We live in an era when that's really challenging. But when you have people with lived experience on top of that who don't have the support system they previously had, it's just that much worse.
Mike Marshall is Executive Director of Oregon Recovers. Heather Jeffries is Executive Director of the Oregon Council for Behavioral Health. We're talking about a letter they signed along with representatives, 18 other organizations providing behavioral health services across the state of Oregon, asking the governor to declare a crisis in staffing. You can join the conversation on the exchange with your own observations or questions for our guests at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Heather, I think we're talking about 10 to 30% underfilled. How many people should be working in behavioral health in Oregon, and what's the actual number?
Well, Jeff, that's a great question, and I think it's a hard question, as Mike mentioned. You know, we have been understaffed and under-accessed for many years here in Oregon. So if we really take it through a lens of knowing that we already were, prior to COVID, not in a place where we really had the access levels to care that we wish we could have in the state of Oregon. What I would tell you is, you know, the members of our association make up a very large percentage of the capacity in the state of Oregon. We don't have all of the behavioral health providers in the state as part of our membership, but I would say that we have probably a good 70% of the capacity, especially for folks on Oregon Health Plan. And what we find is, again, across those programs, 10 to 30% underfilled, getting closer to everyone really having closer to 30%. And we previously, before COVID, had around 8,000 to 10,000 employees in our membership. So that could give you an idea of we are down considerably. And that's a lot of potential careers and caring services that can really be mission-driven. And we hope folks will continue to do the work we do. We just thank our workers so much. They are true heroes, saving lives every day, as Mike mentioned, particularly in this terrible time when overdoses and mental health concerns are on the rise. It's very important and meaningful work.
Well, yeah, and it is easy to see how COVID has had an impact here. But you mentioned that there was already a great loss or great understaffing before COVID even hit. Why is that in Oregon? But I mean, if it ranks 47th, obviously it's not doing as well as some other states. What are some of the keys to Oregon's problems here, Heather?
Well, I think that there's some really longstanding concerns around the structure of behavioral health. I think perhaps some of your listeners and yourself have heard about mental health and substance use parity. We know in the nation, not just Oregon, that for many, many, many years, access to insurance resources to help pay for that and parity with physical health have not always been in place, and that is something that has been driven in the last decade or so by the federal government to try and help both the commercial and the public plans to improve the quality of their coverage so that more people can access care earlier for behavioral and services like mental health and substance use disorder, just like your physical health or going to the primary care doctor. So that is a very large component of the inability for folks to access because their coverage may not always cover in the same way, though there has been strides to improve that. So I would say that is a large piece of the puzzle, really just making sure that there's parity for those services and that people can access them just as readily as physical health.
And then, you know, even without COVID, I would think there'd be some issues of retention. This would be a difficult job, I think, in the best of circumstances. Mike Marshall, I mean, is that part of what goes on in behavioral health?
Oh, without a doubt. First of all, it's within the healthcare system, addiction and mental health workers are the worst paid, with the addiction workers, the very worst paid. And so it's a mission-driven job, but at some point, the finances of being the lowest paid, being the lowest on the economic rung is just really, really difficult. I will say this, Jeff, one of the burdens are pre-existing, to the point that we made earlier. There isn't a comprehensive system in care. It's a fractured and incomplete system. There are really good people doing really good work, but they're not connected in basically four different components. Number one, prevention. We have virtually no statewide prevention program. We have some good local county prevention programs, but we really, really underfund. I think we spend 1% of all the money we spend on substance use disorder on prevention. That's just crazy. Number two, we've moved it with the passage of Measure 110. We've moved decriminalization of drugs. So the intervention process of this out of the criminal justice system, it's supposed to move into the healthcare system, but we didn't lay any groundwork, and we are not laying much substantive groundwork in getting the healthcare system better equipped and more inclined to intervene in someone's mental health or drug issues farther upstream for when they actually have really severe consequences. The point we're making today is access to care has always been a problem. Wait times are really long for folks, upwards of 5 or 6 weeks. And I can tell you, as someone in recovery, when I was ready to get into treatment, thankfully, I was able to borrow money and go to a private treatment provider, and I got in that day. Most people don't have that luxury, and so they have to wait 5 or 6 weeks. Well, when you are actively using and you miss that opportunity, it's very hard to come back 5 weeks later. And then lastly, recovery support. We don't comprehensively invest in recovery support. We have the Recovery Cafe down in Medford, which is an amazing organization that helps people in recovery. We don't have many of those around the state. There's only four or five of them like the Recovery Cafe, and most of them are here in Portland. So we don't have a system of care. So when you work in that system and the other parts aren't working, it is just that much added stress to the work that you're trying to accomplish.
Mike Marshall, Executive Director at Oregon Recovers. Heather Jeffries, Executive Director at Oregon Council for Behavioral Health. Two of the signers of 20 in a letter to the governor of Oregon asking for the direct declaration of a behavioral health staffing crisis. It is an emergency situation, as you're hearing. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Heather Jeffries, what can the state do? What is within its powers, especially since we're talking about staffing that is often not about state agencies?
So in the letter, Jeff, we really are asking for two primary things. One is things that support behavioral health provider agencies in operations and ensuring that their workforce are incentivized and supported to stay in the job and also to entice and recruit new workforce. First in the emergency level. And then the second is to also reduce the burden of administrative oversight and to improve both our short and our long-term planning. Because as we know from research and data, the impacts of this pandemic and really what, once in 150-year crisis, hopefully, that we're going to need some significant planning and that behavioral health needs actually escalate as the actual physical health concerns abate, right? When we all have that pause after a big stressful moment, that's sometimes when we have time for things to sneak up on us, right? And so we know as behavioral health providers that we are looking for another good 12 to 18 months of increased behavioral health, both mental health and substance use disorder needs. So we really are hoping that we can all work together to support these needs and to support services. You know, as Mike was saying, I think across the state, we've seen reduced impact. And I can give you one example. We had in our membership, we had about 639 substance use disorder residential treatment beds. So that's 639 people on any given day could have been in care or had access to one of those 639 beds. And with social distancing and the reduction in workforce, we are down to about 399 opportunities for care in the state of Oregon for residential adult substance use disorder. So you can see that impact is quite significant. So we want to preserve those resources. And as Mike said, we want to connect those early interventions, outpatient and residential care, so that people can get the right service at the right time.
I noticed one of the things you're asking of the governor is to at least to get the Oregon Health Authority to look into increasing Medicaid reimbursement rates for substance use disorder treatment and recovery services. Are those not reimbursed at the same rate as other services provided through Medicaid, Oregon Health Plan?
Well, what we would say is, I mentioned earlier, Jeff, the parity. For mental health and substance use disorder services, and particularly substance use disorders, those rates have stayed very, very low for many, many, many years. And we know things like utilities, wages, benefits, all of those things that have to be there to support the workforce and make sure that they have a good and healthy life themselves, those costs have increased. So what we find, and I can tell you on the adult residential substance use disorder side, is those Medicaid rates pay for about, on average, 70 to 75% of the daily operation cost. So that means, you know, paying the utilities of the building, paying the quality caring staff, a living wage and their benefits, making sure that you have the right insurances and all the things that are required to run a healthy, productive, and successful healthcare intervention to help people get on the path to recovery. And so that's a pretty big gap. We call that the, there's a wonderful nonprofit speaker, and he calls that the nonprofit penalty, right? That you have to fundraise and find other contracts to pay that other 30%, which makes doing things like wage increases and improved benefits packages to honor and respect that highly skilled workforce and people living in recovery, sharing their wisdom, very difficult, and to keep them engaged and to treat them with the honor and the respect that they deserve in their position.
We have about a minute to get a little more on Measure 110 in here, decriminalizing a lot of drugs. Mike Marshall, you touched on this briefly. Addiction recovery centers are supposed to be up or in some form by October 1st. Is that going to happen?
No. In the legislature, it was modified with, I think, broad stakeholder support. Heather and I were part of the work group that the Senate put together. That instead people should go to the 1-800 number that's available. And then they're setting up what they're calling, the acronym is BURN. Heather, jump in here if you remember what the acronym stands for.
It's called the Behavioral Health Recovery Network, Mike.
And why don't you explain what those are real quickly?
Yeah. And so the Behavioral Health Recovery Network is, as Mike mentioned, we really in the state want to make sure that we have the right job in the right place, right? And that means that there's a network of services. And, you know, not everything can be done by everyone. And so having a network where perhaps there's a wonderful recovery center, like Mike mentioned the place in Medford, and then a residential treatment facility, doesn't necessarily have to be owned by one or run by one program, right, but actually partners coming together to leverage what they've got in a good old Oregon collaborative way.
Okay. Bottom line here being that a lot more staffing needed for behavioral health services across the state of Oregon. Thanks to Mike Marshall and Heather Jeffries for making the case clear.